First, though, the Pentagon is working on changes to its acquisition system. Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics Frank Kendall detailed some of them on this program yesterday. You can hear that interview anytime at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Bill Greenwald is a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He's writing about five factors plaguing Pentagon procurement and how to fix them. Bill, it's great to have you back on the program. I love the alliteration in your title, first of all. You've got F's and P's in there to make it difficult for me to say. But you're hitting on five things here that are at the core of the issues that the Pentagon is dealing with. There are a lot more. How did you narrow it down to just these five that you wanted to focus on, Bill?
Thank you, Francis, and thanks for having me on the show. I really wanted to look at kind of those systemic issues, and I went kind of back in history and tried to go back to why we have the system we have today, and by doing so, really looked at when did the acquisition system really get started? When did the Truth in Negotiation Act start, the cost accounting standards and things like that? And by doing that, I came up with these kind of five issues.
The issues that the Pentagon is facing, as I mentioned, Mr. Kendall talked about them yesterday. But you get at kind of the core of it at the very beginning, the very first one, trust in central planning, rules, regulation, process, and bureaucracy. Where do you think the Pentagon went wrong in the trust equation, and who trusting whom, Bill?
Well, it's really kind of remarkable when you go back and look at the kind of the pillars of acquisition or acquisition requirement system, budget system, and cost accounting system, and they were all really kind of created around this late 1950s, early 1960s era, and that was an era when we were as a country were very very concerned about the Soviet Union and actually thought that the way that they were getting Sputnik in the air and the missile gap at the time, it may have been even a system that was something that we should emulate. And in some sense, some of those things got into the system at that time.
You quote J. Ronald Fox of the Harvard Business School saying, despite decades of reform efforts, 50 years later, acquisition reforms continue to seek remedies to the same problems. And you allude to the fact that over the last 50 years, one of the things that people have gotten at time after time after time, cost overruns, schedule slippages, performance issues, and yet here we sit in 2013 thinking about the F-35 program, thinking about the Littoral Combat Ship program, and many others, each of which exhibit those three things that you're talking about.
No, absolutely. And one of the problems we have is we have to decide whether we want stability, and we want stability in design, stability in programs, or do we want innovation? And if we want innovation, we have to come up with a different type of system and a different way of measuring those cost, schedule, and performance things. I think we can do very well in cost, schedule, performance, but we have to make that trade-off, which is we're not going to have a very innovative, advanced technological system.
Now, one of the things in there, maybe the most important thing where we stand today, is the cost part of that, and Frank Kendall talked about that yesterday. I've spoken to other Pentagon officials trying to build a cost culture into the Pentagon. And they believe they're making progress, but it's hard to see that from the outside. Is that the most important of those three elements to attack, do you think, when we're talking about this one particular issue?
No, I think you have to look at incentive structure. And I think there is too much of a focus on cost. And yes, there should be a focus on aggregate cost, but not necessarily a focus on what it costs to do to produce something. In other words, I think that's more important. There's a quote in there that Pierre Chow gave that seems like the Pentagon is more interested in a 5% profit margin on a $1 billion program than giving up 20% margin on a $500 million program that does the same thing. That's the incentive structure they have to attack. They have to go after trying to drive costs down through the incentive structure of the profit motive.
What do you think is preventing them from doing that then? That doesn't sound like that's a regulatory issue. That doesn't sound like that's anything except we have to think about doing things differently than we've done them before.
I think there has been that's one of the things where Congress and the administration has to work together to accept a higher margin for something that costs less. And that has not necessarily been the case. That's also something that the oversight community has to be comfortable with. And that's not hasn't been the case. So you kind of have to bring together a lot of players to accept that culture change that, yes, indeed, we can get more value, but it's going to cost us a little bit more as far as in part profit margin.
The margin structure part of it, I think, is worth looking at, though, Bill, because I don't buy anything. I wouldn't buy a car based on the fact that the dealership is going to make a certain percentage on it. I buy it based on what I need and what I can afford, and I wonder how we got into the margin business in the first place, about caring about the margin business in the first place.
Well, and then that goes back into the 60s as well, when we ended up working with sole source contractors and really had to figure out how do we ensure we're not getting ripped off. And that's where the truth in negotiation came out, and the requirement for all these contractors to document in meticulous detail the cost of their product, and what it took to make it. So that is something that we've been involved in the system for 50 years, and it's awful hard to get around. We need competition. We need to bring commercial sector folks in as well, but that's kind of where we historically have the problem.
Is that one of the things that is sufficiently a vestige of an earlier era that you think we could do without it now?
Well, we still have an awful lot of sole source contracts with defense unique contractors, whether it's in shipbuilding, whether it's in advanced aircraft, whether it's in ground vehicles. So that is going to be a difficult nut to crack, although I think it can be done at subsystems level. And it could be done definitely in the services area and the IT area.
All right. You used a term there that helps us transition to the second issue that you write about, and that is a preference for defense-unique solutions. You talk about the first example of this, again, happening in the 1960s as electronics started to miniaturize. And you detail this in the paper that you've written, and we have linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But this is another vestige of the way that the Defense Department did business in the 60s and 70s that hasn't really changed much. Why is there this fascination with the defense industrial base and it being almost an entity unto itself, separate from the rest of the industrial base and the economy?
I think it's because we were so successful. I mean, the programs and technologies we developed in the 50s and 60s are still driving our military machine. And because of that, I think it's very difficult to transition to the fact that, you know, now technology is being driven in the commercial sector in many areas. And so you've got this culture that's wedded back to the 60s and 70s when we drove R&D, and it's just very difficult to get your arms around the fact that we're no longer the 800-pound gorilla in many of these markets.
Well, you write, Secretary of Defense William Perry began his own acquisition reform efforts by attempting to move DOD away from its dependence on military specifications and by adopting commercial specifications wherever possible. What happened?
I think what happened is the budgets went up. If you recall at that time, that was a downturn in the budget. And there was a need to try to do exactly what I think Secretary Kendall would like to do, which is drive, you know, costs down and get more value for his dollar. And so at that time, there was no alternative to doing so. When the budgets went up to up to $700 billion, including overseas funding, the incentive kind of went away.
You write about something here that, as it happened at that time, was no doubt desirable for the Department of Defense and is exactly what a number of officials at DOD have told me they would like to achieve now. Not necessarily, I'm not inferring that they think that this is the way that they should go about doing things, but they would like the end result here that I'll talk about. DOD had access to the latest technology, faster delivery, lower prices, and you write about others, advantages. The use of commercial contracting practices allowed commercial companies to enter the government marketplace and provide products to both commercial and military customers using common product lines and workforces. The R&D for these products was paid for by these commercial companies, which freed up funding for DOD to pursue other priorities. And that's the part that DOD officials tell me that they'd like to see more investment in R&D, and I would think that they wouldn't be picky about whether it was happening inside the Pentagon or inside the walls of the companies that sell to the Pentagon.
You would think, but they also don't, and that leads to the next issue, transition, is that they don't want to give the return for that R&D. In other words, in the commercial marketplace, you invest in something, and then over the course of several years, you get a pretty decent return on it. And there's a distrust of doing that and a desire to only get a one-time profit on that R&D, and that's driving a lot of commercial guys companies not to want to put that kind of investment in.
Bill Greenwald's a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and writing under the title Five Factors Plaguing Pentagon Procurement. We'll continue our conversation in a minute on Pentagon Solutions on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Today's Pentagon Solutions guest, Bill Greenwald of the American Enterprise Institute, writing about five factors plaguing Pentagon procurement, and you can read his piece at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have a link there so you can find it on AEI's website. And the first two issues that we've already talked about, Bill, take us straight into the third one because they revolve around the industry DOD relationship, and you write that the third issue plaguing Pentagon procurement is a distrust of industry and excessive profits. Now, we talked in the last part of our conversation about the fixation with margins, and yet you cite in your work a couple of places Jack Gansler, former Undersecretary for ATL, and he's told his story on about the JDAM missile on this program a number of times. It had to cost this much, it had to do this particular thing, and it had to be able, they had to be, the whoever won the contract had to be able to produce this many in a certain period of time, and that happened. In that procurement, the margin doesn't really matter if it achieves the things the government wants in the budget that it has to set. So I guess I go back to my question earlier about this whole issue about excessive profits and so on.
No, absolutely. The JDAM example is a great one in the sense that it's a solutions-based contract. In other words, we want something, we want it at a relatively fixed cost, and frankly, we want to do what it is we wanted to, and we don't care if you what the margin is, and it's up to the contractor to figure it out. And if they do it right, they get paid well. If they do it wrong, well, their margins are a lot lower.
What is the holdup, I guess, from doing more acquisitions that way? Then, if that's the one, if that's an example that keeps getting held up as one that worked,
I think it comes down to it's risky. It's a risky type of a procurement in the sense that one, it could fail. Two, you could be criticized that your margins are too high once you go back into auditing it. So it's just kind of one of these things where senior leadership like Frank Kendall, like Jack Gansler at the time, need to essentially have the back of the acquisition workforce and to encourage solutions-based and best-value procurements.
You write in this piece, the war on profits at DOD is another example of the Pentagon bureaucracy's lack of understanding of how the private sector works and how to use profit incentives to reward good performance. But as we look at the top of the charts in the Pentagon, Mr. Kendall's been in the private sector. Bill Lynn, the former deputy, was in the private sector and is now back in the private sector. There are a lot of people at the top of the organization that have been not just in defense contractors, but have been in defense contractors too, and so understand that process. And I wonder what happens when they go in the building that makes them kind of change their minds all of a sudden.
Well, I think it's just difficult to just get into that job and go through the daily churn and then to sit back and say, well, what's wrong with it? And that's kind of why I did this kind of a think piece, and essentially hopefully that they'll start, you know, thinking along the lines of some of these issues. I know that it's an issue for them. I don't think they understand. It's just getting the word out and that it is okay to take a risk on some of these programs.
We could probably spend the rest of our time together, Bill, just tearing that one apart because there's a lot of meat to it. But I want to go on to the fourth of your five factors plaguing Pentagon procurement. The fourth is the fear of discretion in the acquisition workforce. This one strikes me that it's pretty easy to codify. This is the risk management issue that you just raised writ large, where people don't want to do anything that they can possibly be criticized on or that someone could perceive them as making a mistake. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say, and I think we have to take a look at the oversight mechanisms that we've created. and whether it's the IGs, DCAA, DCMA, or whatever, and look at the negative incentives they're driving. You know, these are smart people, smart auditors, smart folks working here, and they have to kind of take a look at what is the impact of our work on the incentive structure in the workforce, and is it affecting the way we can do our job?
Frank Kendall talked about Better Buying Power 2.0, and you allude to that in this piece. You write that BBP 2.0 notes that the current certification process for the acquisition workforce does not adequately ensure that workforce members are qualified for their positions, proposes several measures, including increased emphasis on the job training to address the problem. And that's very desirable, but it's a really long process too, Bill.
It is a really long process, and I think in the meantime, as they grow their workforce, they're going to need help from the outside, whether it's from retired annuitants who've already done this before, whether it's individuals from industry, not just the defense industry, but I think even more outside of the defense industry to come in and bring their expertise and a new look at how we should be doing procurement at the Pentagon.
The last of your five factors is prioritizing cost and price over results and value. And my question here is, should I infer from the way that you're organizing this that you combine, that you associate cost and price very tightly, and you associate results and value very tightly, and you perceive them to be kind of at odds with each other?
Yes, and from a historical perspective, I think, you know, obviously cost is important, price is important, and you know, in a reasonable manner, we should obviously be looking at that and looking at tools to assess that. But we've gone overboard and to the exclusion of getting the best deal for the taxpayer, and so I think that's the issue that I'm trying to identify there.
Yeah, because the issue was, if we go back to the JDAM example, it strikes me that we could combine cost and results, and we could even combine cost and value, and those are not necessarily at odds with each other conceptually, even if they are in reality right now.
That exactly, and the issue becomes the difference between the overall cost of a program and the individual costs of every single subsystem, sub-entity, labor hour that goes into that program. And we're focused on the forest there, you know, rather than the trees here.
You wrap this with a discussion about LPTA, and that topic is pretty clear-cut. Industry hates it. The Pentagon seems to like it right now. And then you write about prospects for genuine reform. And this is where I want to end, because we have these conversations. You and I have had conversations like this before, and I've talked to any number of people inside the building and outside the building. And we have a general consensus, first of all, that something has to change, and second of all, on a pretty high-level framework of what has to change. And yet, as I mentioned earlier, we're still looking at the same things that people have been looking at for 50 years. Is it, can we be optimistic about prospects for genuine reform, as you titled the last part of your piece, or are we just kind of tilting at the windmill?
Well, that's why I went back in history, and there are two eras where it worked, and there were two downturns: the 1950s, Eisenhower's New Look, and the 1990s with commercial item acquisition reform. And both of those were a downturn. There was no alternative to doing the right thing. And I think the right thing here is enhanced competition, best value results for contracting, streamline the rules, government industry partnerships, more market resource, more commercial type of procurements.
Bill, congratulations on this piece. Thank you very much for coming on to talk about it. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.